Welcome to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, sponsored by EarthX, the world's largest environmental experience, and also sponsored by Natural Awakenings magazine. Live your healthiest life on a healthier planet. Now here's your host, Bernice Butler.
Welcome to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today. We're now nearing the end of our fourth season, and we remain just as excited as ever to continue to help you explore and understand that unbreakable relationship between your health and the health of the planet. Here we look at the hottest topics related to our environment and its sustainability and how they affect your health and wellness. Here are issues like climate change, plastic pollution, extreme weather events, and others will meet up with everyday impacts like allergies and asthma, digestive issues and gut health, cancers, lung, heart issues, and more. So listen in today as we interview experts for today's show on environmental justice, climate change, and health outcomes. How and why environmental issues and their health impacts have burdened some portions of our population, and how and why they're coming for us all. And so today we're going to be talking about the interconnected strands uniting environmental justice, climate justice, and health for all. Now, in the intricate web of our planet's systems, the threads of environmental well-being, climate stability, and human health are delicately intertwined. While we navigate our daily lives, it's pretty easy to overlook the profound influence of these threads on our day-to-day existence. Yet, the truth remains that environmental challenges and their health consequences are not isolated issues affecting only a few. They are universal factors that wield the power to shape the destiny of communities, of nations, and the entire globe. And in today's exploration of environmental justice, climate justice, and health outcomes, we'll uncover how and why these concerns have historically burdened certain populations and why they should or must concern each and every one of us. Environmental factors such as air and water quality are fundamental determinants of our health and our well-being. Environmental factors can lead to disease and health disparities when the places where people live, work, where they learn, and where they play are burdened by social inequities. And these social inequities, often referred to as social determinants of health, include differences in individual behaviors, it includes cultural influences, includes access to health services, includes economic status, and literacy levels. And environmental health disparities exist when communities exposed to a combination of poor environmental quality and social inequities have more sickness and more disease than wealthier, less polluted communities, says the National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences, which, of course, this is our watchdog federal agency, and they have long worked to reduce environmental health disparities and promote environmental justice, which they define as the fair treatment and meaningful involvement of all people in environmental laws and policies, regardless as to race, nationality, or income. Now, more than 12 million people around the world die every year because they live or work in unhealthy environments. Environmental pollutants can cause health problems like respiratory diseases, heart disease, and some types of cancer. And people with low incomes are more likely, say statistics, to live in polluted areas and have unsafe drinking water. As children and pregnant women also are at higher risk of health problems related to pollution. We witness environmental injustice when our single-use plastic is incinerated, causing air pollution in low-income communities in the U.S., or when it's shipped overseas to overwhelm Southeast Asian communities. We witness environmental injustice in Flint, Michigan, a majority all-black community that still has lead in its water, and when state violence harms indigenous youth fighting to protect their land. These are just a few examples of the impact of environmental injustice that highlight the necessity of centering environmental justice in our society and centering it in our daily conversations. Because you can find situations of environmental injustice in and near just about each and every community in our land. Now, the last 40 years of research has outlined these patterns of environmental injustice where Black and brown communities bear the brunt of environmental degradation or pollution. And now climate change is adding a whole nother dimension to all of this. Those communities also often experience the worst effects of climate change fueled risk like hurricanes and wildfires. Environmental justice is an important part of the struggle to improve and maintain a clean and healthy environment for all citizens of our planet Earth, because what affects any of us affects all of us. Environmental justice advocates assert, plausibly enough, that poor and minority areas are a magnet for environmental hazards, in part because wealthier and whiter communities that are better able to defend their interests can shun them. But whatever may have been true in the past, well, these days, minorities and whites alike often effectively marshal local outrage to play the, quote, not in my backyard or NIMBY game. And the disproportionate impact on minorities, rather than a burden borne solely by them, again, because we are increasingly seeing and increasingly experience spread of these impacts to all of us, irrespective. And again, we like to say it's coming for us all, and it indeed is. Often, a minority area is simply one with a greater than average percentage of minority residents. But since toxic air emissions, pesticide runoffs, and groundwater contamination cannot neatly select their victims by race or income, then the inequities visited upon minorities affect a great many others as well. Again, it's coming for us all. Indeed, the range of arguably significant environmental equity comparisons is so broad that some doubtlessly cut the other way. Many Native Americans, for example, breathe cleaner air than urban yuppies and live further from hazardous waste than white ethnic of their community. Now, this is a lot. But here today to help us explore and unpack some of this are some experts who are going to make us smarter. Today we have with us Carol Ziegler. Carol is a professor of nursing at Vanderbilt University. She is co-founder of the Climate and Health and Energy Equity Lab at Wondery, and she serves on the Metro Nashville Board of Health, as well as the Lancet Commission Countdown on Climate and Health, who visits with us each year to tell us about their report. She is also a member of the American Nurse Association's Planetary and Global Health Innovation Committee. Carol also has a primary care clinical practice called Thrive Holistic Care. She works on identifying and mitigating local health impacts related to climate change there, as well as educating healthcare providers and community members about climate change and climate solutions. Welcome, Carol, and did I get all of that right?
Yes, you did. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here with you this morning.
And thank you so much for making time to join us. Our other guest is Katrina Smith-Korfmacher. Katrina is professor of environmental medicine and director of community engagement for the Environmental Health Science Center and the Institute for Human Health and the Environment at the University of Rochester. As a policy scientist, Katrina's research focuses on the roles of science and communities in decision making. She has worked with community partnerships and national groups related to childhood lead poisoning prevention, related to healthy homes, air quality, the built environment, fracking, water pollution, and other environmental justice issues for over 20 years. Katrina is author of a book called Bridging Silos, Collaborating for Environmental Health and Justice in Urban Communities. Welcome, Katrina, and did I get all of that right?
Absolutely. So pleased to be with you today, Bernice.
And again, thank you so much for making time out of your busy schedule to join us today. Now, we only have a couple of minutes before we go to break, but I am going to go ahead and start with you, Carol. Can you explain, Carol, how certain populations in our society are indeed disproportionately burdened by environmental issues and their health impacts? And then what factors contribute to this disparity?
Yeah, thank you. That's such an important question. I think you hit on it briefly right in the introduction that Black, Indigenous people of color, often because of location where they are impacted by exposures. And so when we think about vulnerability to these sorts of impacts, we think about it in terms of exposure and then also sort of bandwidth or resilience reserves that a population or a family has on hand, right? And so the populations that are typically most at risk are the ones you mentioned. So Black, Indigenous people of color, people who work outdoors, which I think in Tennessee, it's about 30% of our workforce is employed in some sector, whether it's first responders, utility workers, agriculture, construction is big, right? So they have really high degrees of exposure. The unhoused community, so people who are experiencing homelessness, are at extreme vulnerability for lots of reasons, right? Children, the elderly and pregnant women, which I believe you mentioned, and then really anyone who has a underlying chronic disease as a significantly increased risk from impacts from environmental issues, especially climate change, things like heat and poor air quality.
And so you mentioned a couple of populations that traditionally have, it's an uphill climb to get people to really be concerned and care about those populations in a deep, meaningful, and moving way. And that is homeless and some of the other minority populations. And we only have a minute to go, so but I'm going to start this so we can talk about it on the other side. And that is, how do we get people to care about these folks being overburdened? And what I'm learning in the 4 years of doing this show, and I keep saying it, and I said it in the introduction, is it's coming for all of us. It's not just there. It's my sense that because those populations are, quote, what I call uncared for, uncared about, that it's been allowed to proliferate, and now it's spilling way far out of that. We're going to go to break now, and we want to give a shout-out to our sponsors. That is Natural Awakenings, Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex Magazine, the Green, Healthy, and Sustainable Living Authority for the DFW Metroplex and North Texas communities. Print issues of Natural Awakenings can be found in all HEB stores, all natural grocers, all central markets, sunflower shops, and many, many other locations, as well as available free for download online at nadallas.com. Check them out. Our other sponsor is Lynn Dental Care, practicing dentistry for over 38 years with a holistic approach, looking at the whole body and none mercury. Specializing in periodontics, Dr. Lynn is board certified by the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. Check them out at LynnDentalCare.com. And our other sponsor is the Plastic Detox Challenge. And this is a challenge and an effort that is being promoted and initiated by EarthDay.org. EarthDay.org is the Earth Day Network, and their purpose is to reduce plastic waste and pollution. The challenge encourages people to take small steps that each of us can take to avoid single-use plastics like bags, straws, bottles, and packaging. And then you can share your eco-friendly swaps and inspire others to join the movement on social media using hashtag Plastic Detox. Thank you, sponsors. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, to today's show on environmental justice, climate justice, and health outcomes. As we dig into the how and why environmental issues and their health impacts have burdened certain populations, and how and why it's coming for us all. And we are back with two experts, Carol Ziegler, a professor of nursing at Vanderbilt University, and Katrina Korfmacher at the University of Rochester. And again, thank you all for making time to be with us today. And before the break, we were talking with Carol, who kind of led us out, who's telling us more about how and why certain populations in our society are disproportionately burdened by environmental issues. And my question to Carol, before we let her go, is how do we get people to care about what happens to the least, the lost, and the left behind of our society? Because it is increasingly spilling over. And I think what we just kind of come through, I hope we've come through it, the COVID pandemic really shined a light on that as we saw how it affected us all. Talk to us about that. How do we get folks to care about what happens to these groups of people as it relates to environmental issues?
Right. I think that really is that's the most important message, right, to get across. And I think about it in terms of sort of four areas. So one is just the need for us to affirm everyone's humanity, to affirm our own, right? So if I value someone else's life less than my own, that's disaffirming my own humanity as a person. And that's a whole nother discussion, right? But I think also in terms of this question, one big factor is that these communities are often sort of the sentinels, right? So it happens to them first and worst, but it eventually will happen to all of us. And so, you know, I'm thinking of an example like in Nashville, we think of the unhoused population as the most at risk for when we have these very hot days. But if the power grid goes out, I'm just as exposed as they are, right? And so I think as the stress increases on the planet, we'll see more of that sort of equalizer, which is extreme weather, which doesn't care where you are. Pandemics don't care where you are, what's in your bank account, right? It's all just sort of, we all will soon equally be exposed. And that's already happening. I think the other thing is in terms of when we think about sort of the new normal we're going to have to all embrace in order to survive, especially climate change, we need these communities, especially indigenous communities who sort of already have embedded in their cultures how to sort of live and survive in a way that doesn't destroy this tiny bubble of a planet that we all share together. So I think if we don't care about those communities, we will lose our roadmap, right, for how to survive this. And then most importantly, this is where I kind of land, and we really stress this with the work we do in the climate lab. A lot of these people really don't contribute much to the problem at all, right? So we think about people who are unhoused, you know, people who are currently climate refugees or conflict refugees and moving. They're not, you know, they don't have access to housing, to air conditioning. A lot of low-income families, they live very densely, you know, multiple people to one apartment. They take the bus everywhere, and walk. And so there's a direct correlation, especially in the United States, between income and carbon footprint, right, or carbon household emissions consumption. And so when I think you sort of lay that layer of the just the deep injustice that these people who really don't contribute to the problem in the way that many of us do are really bearing the brunt with their bodies. That's something I like to always highlight so people are aware of that fact.
Katrina, I want to come to you with kind of the same question or similar. Can you shed light on how environmental challenges have disproportionately affected certain segments of our population when it comes to health outcomes that you've seen in your work? And again, from where you sit, can you help us understand why the same groups and populations seem to be negatively impacted by many, if not most, environmental issues? And then onto that, are there, or what are the reasons, perhaps, that groups with power should be, or I like to say, must be, concerned about environmental justice on the health of marginalized communities?
So I agree with everything that Carol just said. And I think, starting with that ethical framework of what we owe to each other and how to have a healthy society, no matter what faith tradition you come from, they all agree that that's the right thing to do. But I think another way to think of this problem is to look historically, because now in all the things that Carol said, there's good scientific evidence that all those things are going to happen. But there's a lot of uncertainty. And I think sometimes looking back in time at what we've seen in the past and how our understanding of these issues evolved can help people who may be hung up on the uncertainties about what we're going to be seeing in the future. So I always like to go back to the fact that originally public health was environmental health, and our initial concerns about the environment were because of human health. So if you look back to the 1850s in England, people were dying of cholera. And the very first case that every public health student learns about is that John Snow, who is a doctor in London at that time, heard about these cholera cases and mapped them and traced them all to a single water pump on Broad Street. And his advice was to take the handle off that pump. And then the cholera epidemic died down. And I think that's important for a couple of reasons. One is that this was a low-income neighborhood, so it's not surprising that people living close together first had that challenge. Another is that he used some data, right, to the best of his ability to try to figure it out, but they didn't even understand how cholera was being traced through water. There was a lot of uncertainty, but he still took this action anyway to address the root cause. And that, I think, is a really important lesson for all of us, because after that, environment and public health sort of separated, right? We developed technologies to protect our water, to collect our trash, to treat air. And so we sort of think of the environment as separate from public health. A lot of our environmental groups started by focusing on wilderness and land protection, not those issues that that were originally driving people to care about the environment where people lived. But we've had new hazards of pollutants, toxins coming out of factories and being generated from mines. And though we have more recently realized that those new kinds of pollutions, those new kinds of environmental threats are also being borne disproportionately by people who live near them, who have fewer resources to deal with them, for two reasons, right? One is because factories may locate in areas that are cheaper to build, and people are less likely to have the resources to fight them. And that tends to be lower-income, urban or rural communities of color, people of different demographics in rural areas who don't have a lot of resources. And then conversely, if there is a factory or something that's a pollutant source, the land around it's going to be cheaper. And so if everywhere else is too expensive, people with fewer resources move to them. So you asked about how this happens. It's the combination of all those forces, as well as the societal, historical, and political factors that draw, you know, people to be subjected to multiple contaminants in their lives. And if I'd just like to add one other side of that, which is we haven't talked about unequal benefits as well. So part of the outcome of the realization that a dirty environment is bad for your health in the 1800s led to zoning regulations and land use where people were separated from each other by income and by race. And so now lower income communities tend to have less access to good sidewalks, to public resources, to grocery stores where they can buy fresh food, to parks. Things that can help to support health are also less common in those same areas where people are getting more of a burden from environmental hazards.
Indeed. And it seems like from what you said, we're at a point of two issues. For the most part, the environmental hazards, health hazards, will affect all of us because they don't stop at the zip code line, the county line, the street line, or whatever. You know, it kind of defines what we mean. It's coming for us all. But those folks nearest to it get probably the highest dose. But all of us get a dose for the most part. But the other issue is that the health condition, or should I loosely say the immune system? I say that because people are used to hearing that word with COVID. The immune system or the health condition for the low-income occupants near those contaminants is very poor, so that they are less likely to be able to withstand those conditions. Whereas when it wafts on over to a couple of other zip codes, they still get it. It's coming for them too. But their immune system or health condition may be better and may allow for them to withstand it. But nevertheless, we do all get it. I think that's a big point I want to get over. Because I think in the past, when people hear that it's just for this community or this group of people, then they tend to wipe it off their table because all of us have way too much stuff on our tables to deal with anyway. One last thing, though, Katrina, before we go to break. Are there any environmental issues that honor or that stay away from these typically overburdened populations? And I want Carol to comment on the same thing.
Yeah, the one that always pops to mind for me is mercury in fish. So there is mercury in a lot of fish, and many times lower income, resource dependent communities are exposed to more. But if you think about wealthy people who are eating sushi, tuna that's got really high rates of mercury in it, that's one of the very few exceptions that I can think of.
Okay, the escape mercury. All right. What about you, Carol? What have you seen?
I think I'm going to have to just double click on what you said, because I also can't think of any other than mercury. I can't.
And one of the things I am going to do a little research on after the show is based upon something I said earlier and you guys mentioned too, and that is the indigenous population. They get dumped on a lot, but I have to think that perhaps because of their lifestyles, their historic connectivity to the land and to natural resources, that there may be something there that stays away from them as well. We're going to go ahead and go to break now. We will be back on the other side with Carol Ziegler, professor of nursing at Vanderbilt University, and with Katrina Korfmacher, who is at the University of Rochester. Thank you all. You are making us smarter already, and we'll be right back on the other side of the break. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio. To today's show on environmental justice, climate justice, and health outcomes, which we'll be looking at for all the month of September. And today, though, we're focusing in on how and why environmental issues and their health impacts have burdened some of our populations and how and why they're coming for us all. And we are back with Carol Ziegler at Vanderbilt University and Katrina Korfmacher at the University of Rochester. And again, thank you all for being with us. Now, I want to go back to Katrina. And could you talk to us a little bit about how some of these hazards, again, that traditionally overburden our vulnerable populations, how do these hazards extend beyond those immediate surroundings to actually influence broader societal and health trends?
Well, Carol gave a couple of those examples, and as did you, about how literally, you know, if you are a farmer and you're using pesticides, you know, and as part of your farming, you and your family may be exposed to those pesticides, but they may also enter the groundwater and travel to the public drinking water source and affect the entire community. Or if there's a chemical, like we've all heard a lot about PFAS lately, and how those are in nonstick coatings and Gore-Tex and lots of products that all of us use. Well, first we thought of those as primarily an issue where there were spills from a factory and they contaminated water sources. But because we put them in so many consumer goods, they've been spread throughout all of our environment and we can find PFAS in all of us. Another example of might be chemicals that are coming out of petroleum industries in Cancer Alley, right? Those same chemicals get into the air, they flow downwind, and as you said, it might be a lower concentration, but they are still affecting other people. So if you think about that initial statistic you gave, that globally 25% of all deaths are due to environmental factors, we know that that's more important than what individual people's genes, their access to healthcare, or their individual behavior choices matter. They matter for everybody.
And Carol, I believe it was you who mentioned earlier that a lot of times the health impacts and environmental issues that are burdening vulnerable communities are often a sentinel, or I like to say a dress rehearsal for the rest of us. Can you talk a little bit more about that and give us some examples that, so that folks can actually kind of understand it and kind of see it in their mind's eye?
Yeah, for sure. So one great example I can think of just in my community is air quality, right? So I work, a lot of the families I take care of live in a HUD-subsidized housing complex in Nashville. And traditionally, it's in an interstate corridor. There's a mulch factory beside it. There's a recycling factory. The air quality has always been pretty poor, both outside and inside of people's units. So they can't really escape the poor air quality. But lately with the heat and with the wildfires, that we have outdoor air quality monitors set up in that community and also one in my home. And there's been a lot of days that it's been just as bad or worse at my home, right, than in some of these communities. So I think, especially when we think about air, you know, there's not really a way to contain it. And so with worsening air quality, that will definitely affect us all. The other thing I was just reading last night on a news channel about, there has been a massive crop failure in India of rice. And so when we think about the economic implications of this, India is now banning rice exports. And they provide something like 40% of the world's rice. So when you combine that with like what's happening in Ukraine and issues with grain exports, I think the impact that especially climate can have on the food system will absolutely impact all of this when we go to the grocery stores, right? So I think when we think about these impacts that spread and how sort of the cascading effects, the domino effects of natural disasters, of poor air quality, of heat. I had a close friend who had a health emergency last week and wasn't able to get seen into an ER because I think there were just a lot of emissions from COVID, from heat. So how it burdens the healthcare system, right? And that kind of spills over and bleeds out. So I think that we are all definitely connected and all of these issues just sort of layer on top of each other, right? And they will impact all of us equally at some point.
And my concern is that as these things happen that are visible and, you know, that make the news and things like that, is that so often the dots are not connected back to the environmental issues so that people don't get an appreciation. It just happens. When they connect the dots, though, then my opinion, and that's what we try to do here on Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, is connect those dots so that people then do care about the rice farmers in India, because that comes right back to their own table. and what they can eat and what they cannot eat. And so I think a lot more of that needs to be done. But Carol, while I have you too, can you talk to us or give us some examples about the ways that environmental challenges, again, such as air and water pollution or lack of green spaces, affect health and well-being of vulnerable communities? And again, give us some real life examples to help us understand the real life impact.
Yeah, so the example I always like to use, because this is just burned into my brain and my heart, is childhood asthma, right? So when we think about air quality, indoor and outdoor air quality, and if you imagine a mother who most likely is working more than one job, getting her children ready for school in the morning, and she comes into the kitchen and her child can't breathe. I don't know if you've ever seen a child have an asthma attack. It's one of the most terrifying things you can imagine, right? And so that child then is likely going to miss school. It's likely difficult for them to get in to see a provider because of healthcare access issues, transportation issues, right, for that family. So all these things sort of pile up. We see that children with asthma typically do miss a lot of school. That affects then their educational outcomes long term, right? And so these effects just sort of pile up on families. The stress of that on that mother, right, is really significant. She's probably going to miss work, right? And so if you're living, you know, paycheck to paycheck in a community like Nashville where rent is astronomical and through the roof, if you miss one rent payment because you missed a week of work, you may now be unhoused. And so I just think there are so many families just right at the edge, really literally paycheck to paycheck. And just one little small insult can just really throw them over sort of off the cliff, right, of where their family can really survive and thrive.
And again, I want to bring it back around to why everybody has to care about that, because typically we don't. And so I'll throw this out to you, Katrina, as well. And I think that, again, we begin to see it vividly clear in COVID. So if we take Carol's example, you know, a mother has to miss work, the child has to miss school, education is suffering. Take that ball and carry on with it, Katrina, as to why everybody has to care, how it affects us all. That's really what I want to dig deep on.
Yeah, I think the asthma example is a really good one. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a child with asthma, perhaps you know an older adult with COPD, right, or some other breathing problem. And most families know that when the air is bad, those people in their lives have a harder time. But if you, again, think about the wildfire smoke that many of us on the East Coast experienced for the first time this summer and folks on the West Coast have been dealing with for a long time, that really helps to understand how these larger trends affect individuals. It affects all of us and anybody who has a health condition. But if you're in a place like Rochester, people with lower incomes tend not to have air conditioning, right? So Carol, you said you'll be fine until the power goes out because you probably have air conditioning, but that's not baked into the infrastructure at a place like Rochester. And so it introduces big disparities in who's going to have these effects. You know, if a child has asthma and their home has air conditioning, maybe they can just stay home and they'll be safer. A lot of schools said, okay, let's close. We shouldn't have outdoor activities. Everybody go home. But the kids who didn't have air conditioning at home, they were probably worse off, right, than if they'd stayed at home. And the really tragic thing about that is that most schools were issued air filters for COVID. And they weren't told to use those for wildfire smoke because that connection wasn't made between that an air filter makes healthier air and that you need to do that proactively before a child starts suffering from asthma. So a report just came out from the CDC last week showing that there were 17% higher emergency department visits for asthma during wildfire days this past summer than would have been expected. And clinicians, agencies, everyone was working really hard to get messages to people with asthma that they should stay home, that they should wear a mask, that they shouldn't exercise outside. But many people were really confused. They were angry. Our environmental agency got calls from people who were angry that they were ruining the air quality and that they weren't fixing the air. And they just didn't understand that this problem was coming from wildfires in Canada that are going to keep burning until October. And that the reason that these wildfires are doing this is because of climate change. And so this is going to become more common in the future. I think that helping people to understand all those connections and how they feed into both disparities and the need to address things at the root and at the impact in local communities is so important.
And one of the things you just mentioned, maybe we need public, all school boards need a public health expert or lean, because how did anybody miss the fact, both of you all, that by closing the schools, they were sending some people home or out into worse situations. How did that disconnect happen?
But a lack of a connection, right? Because we don't have those systems. Now, in places like Washington State and Oregon, they've done terrific work bringing agencies together, developing tools for schools, making sure that those communication systems are in place. You might think of Washington and Oregon as a sentinel place for what both of us on the East Coast are now experiencing. We need to learn those lessons and build those systems for connection that we just don't have yet.
Indeed, and it seems like way past time for us to have those. We just have a minute to go. We're going to go ahead and go to break, and then I want to come back on the other side and talk to Carol about some of the some insights from what she's seen. Thank you. We want to give a shout out now to our sponsors. That is Natural Awakenings, Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex Magazine, The Green, Healthy, and Sustainable Living Authority for the DFW Metroplex and North Texas communities. Print issues of Natural Awakenings can be found in all HEB stores, all natural grocers, all central markets, sunflower shops, and many, many other locations, as well as available free for download online at nadallas.com. Check them out. Our other sponsor is Lynn Dental Care, practicing dentistry for over 38 years with a holistic approach, non-mercury, looking at the whole body. Specializing in periodontics, Dr. Lynn is board certified by the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. Check them out at LynnDentalCare.com. And our other sponsor is the Plastic Detox Challenge. That Plastic Detox Challenge is put on by EarthDay.org, and it's an initiative of the Earth Day Network, and the purpose is to reduce plastic waste and pollution. The challenge encourages people to take small steps to avoid single-use plastics like bags, straws, bottles, and packaging. And then you can share your eco-friendly swaps so that others will know them, as well as to inspire others to join the movement on social media by using hashtag Plastic Detox. Get involved. Thank you. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio. To today's show on environmental justice, climate justice, and health outcomes, as we dig into the how and why environmental issues and their health impacts have burdened certain populations, and how and why they're coming for all of us now. And we are back with Carol Ziegler at the Vanderbilt University and Katrina Korfmacher at the University of Rochester. And they indeed are making us smarter. I want to start this segment, though, back with Carol. And Carol, if you can share some insights on perhaps some environmental issues that are, I guess, emerging that you are seeing that may be new, different, or whatever, that are emerging that affect specific populations that might, or I think we can take the word might out, that will eventually have broader implications for everyone in the long run.
Sure. I think the one that is really coming to mind, and I think it's people are aware of it now, is air quality, right? And so with the fires, we have this sort of double effect. So we have both the poor air quality, right, which is impacting health. We have the increasing, dramatic, sudden increase in CO2 emissions. And then we have the loss of that forest as sort of a carbon sink to suck up CO2 emissions. Mm-hmm. So I guess I think of these, I'm thinking about these things in terms of climate change, right, and carbon emissions. But I think one of the most salient examples are these sort of new and emerging pathogens that we're seeing, right? And so we have seen research that's come out that said, I think it's like 75% of pathogens do better in a hotter, higher CO2 level environment. Humans typically do worse. So we have that sort of double whammy effect of our immune systems are negatively impacted, our resilience is negatively impacted, but the pathogens tend to thrive. And so we're seeing, you know, as the tundra thaws and as all sort of our ecological environment changes, we're seeing emergence of these new pathogens come on board. So those are two things that I think are really significant. But I did want to just say something about right before we left about the issue of sort of not having awareness of what's happening in people's homes. And so there's a couple of points I just want to make. One is there's a framework from the CDC, which is sort of the health and all policies framework. And so if you're a policymaker or you're doing that kind of work, it would be great if in all, you know, local city councils and mayoral offices, if in all, you know, local governments, there was a sort of health and all policies approach. So health was the goal for education, for all these different things. So we could sort of de-silo. Then the other thing I think that's really important is to have frontline community members at the tables making policy, right? And so that's really the only way to get at this, or frontline providers. And I think frontline providers need to get in people's homes. So, you know, there's this big, like when I see a patient, there's a lot of things that are their normal baseline that they don't think to tell me that are not my normal baseline, right? So A, we need people from those communities to be nurses and to be doctors and to be providing healthcare, so they know that intuitively. Until we get those numbers, those of us that are here now need to be in people's homes and developing really strong relationships with communities, so that there's this sort of communication that happens organically that just doesn't happen if you're in a clinical environment. People don't think to tell you some of these things.
I want to go back to Katrina now. Katrina, are there messaging strategies that should be adopted to help people understand the significance of environmental justice? And what are perhaps some instances where improvements in one area could lead to positive outcomes in the other?
I'd actually like to build on Carol's message of health in all policies, mm-hmm. because a lot of communities, when you talk to people, they assume that if a decision is being made, whether it's about building something new or changing a policy, that somebody's thinking about the effects on health. And that's not actually the way things are done, right? That it's not the transportation department's explicit job to protect health. Same thing with education, same thing with criminal justice, that it's not written into what those agencies and how those decisions are made, that they need to consider health. And that's why the idea of health in all policies has been sort of organically added to a lot of these ideas. And the poster child, I think, for how this can be done at a local level is Duluth, Minnesota. I think they've done a fantastic job of literally adopting a health in all policies approach to everything the city does, for organizing a lot of different community changes. And that's why I wrote a whole chapter about Duluth and their health in all policies efforts in my book. And I don't mind saying that, because thanks to the MIT's libraries, the book is available for free for download. And if you want to learn more about how Duluth has used health in all policies, it talks about transportation and land use and food access there. But Bernice, I think that also addresses your question about messaging. That sometimes we find that there have been longstanding environmental problems and environmental injustices that have been framed as environmental issues. But most of the communities that are experiencing them, they care about them because they know it's about health. And when you make that connection to say, no, this isn't just an environmental issue, this is a health issue, and making it really clear, whether you add health data to that or economic analyses, it brings different stakeholders to the table and adds a new energy to being able to save that, to solve that problem.
Indeed. And that's the whole purpose and the premises of Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, really, is to connect, show people, explore, and unpack the connections between environmental issues and health impacts, because everybody cares about health. And probably as we drill down in this month of shows on environmental justice and climate justice, is to get everybody to care about the health of everybody and to realize it's all totally interconnected. It's an egg that cannot be unscrambled. But again, the point is to get everybody to see that. And we're not there yet. Again, I keep saying, but it's true. There was a glimpse into this with COVID, because as you guys mentioned, you both of you all were talking earlier using the example of asthma and its effect on parents and children and the domino effect. Well, there's another domino effect. Many of those low-income folks who live next to that plant that's causing all these issues and things will work at our local grocery stores, our restaurants, and places like that. And what that means, I'm finding, after COVID is that the restaurant can't open, or it can't open fully, or it takes an hour to get your order, or an hour to get your carry out, or to get your DoorDash or whatever, or you may never get it. And so those are other domino ways that they're affecting us all. So if we're not seeing and being sensitized to the moral imperative, it's still affecting our day-to-day going, and that's going to get worse. I know all of us, I tried to take my car to the shop last week, and I have to wait 3 weeks because of supply chain issues. And again, those are dominoes that have fallen, or that are wobbly, or that have been lost due to the overburden of many environmental issues on people's health. But that needs to be talked about a lot more. Now, both of you all mentioned something I want to talk about a little bit more, and we don't have that long to go, and that is health in all policies. where is that? Who is promoting that? How does that get promoted more? How does everybody know about it? I've not heard about it a lot. So if we can start with you, Carol, and then Katrina, too, if you can talk on that.
So I think one thing here at the School of Nursing, we have embedded that into our policy courses. So for the DNP students, MN students, we talk about it all the time because we want them to be cultivated as leaders.
Right.
And then I think in municipalities, like now, you know, I was recently appointed to the Board of Health. So my hope is that we can start to sort of roll these out. And I'm definitely going to get your book so I can see how to roll that sort of out in Nashville and make Nashville the next Duluth.
Thank you. And Katrina, if you can talk about that more in our... What are the new Duluths? Are there other people coming on with that? And is there an agency or NGO? Who's pushing that? How do we get it pushed more?
You know, I think that, as Carol said, that's being baked into public health education and planning more and more as professionals recognize that. But as I suggested before, communities have always known this. Right? They already know. It's the systems that need to catch up with them. So simply by making sure that affected communities are driving the bus, that connection is going to be made because it is so obvious to people who are experiencing it, because it makes so much sense that it's just not the way our decisions are made. And people understand that pretty clearly. So I think that really emphasizing community engagement and listening to people about what their priorities and experiences are is a real key to moving the idea of health in all policies forward.
Indeed, but a lot of city councils and state legislatures and federal legislatures need to have that at the top also. But it certainly is. I appreciate that it's being taught in schools so that these people, as they come out, as they become leaders, as they become workers or cogs in all of these wheels, then they will carry with them that necessity of health in all policies, because I think that will move things ahead further. We just have a few minutes to go. And so I want to go back to Carol. As we consider the interconnectedness of environmental challenges and their impacts, what role can policy play and how can we advocate for more and drive the meaningful policy changes to address these issues on a larger scale?
I think a couple of ways. I think one is we have to decarbonize the energy grid and move our hairs on fire to do that. And then we have to electrify the motor vehicle fleet and transportation. That's where our biggest emissions are coming from. And I think if we can sort of transition away from fossil fuels, we'll both have dramatic improvements in air quality and also sort of stem the tide of climate change. So we'll see dramatic, you know, health improvements across populations across the globe with those changes. I think we need public-private partnerships. So private industry sometimes moves much faster than government. And so having incentives for private industries to sort of green themselves, I think, is really powerful. And that, to me, then connects to letting consumers make informed choices. So whether that's carbon labeling or people being aware of the impacts of the things that they buy, right, that purchasing power is really significant. And then, you know, building communities. I mean, just organically building communities, sponsoring innovation, encouraging, you know, grassroots sort of innovation to sort of address some of these issues. And then I think from the policy piece, we have to have tenacity. I see these groups coming together, you know, and we'll create these big documents with policy recommendations, and it doesn't get shepherded through. And so I think we've got to get people in academia, people in practice, to really get involved in policy and shepherd those things all the way through to the end.
Considering, you know, the systemic nature, Katrina, of the environmental disparities, how can ordinary citizens play a role in advocating for changes? And then what can ordinary people do in their everyday lives to help drive solutions?
Well, people always say think globally, act locally. And I like to riff on that to say think locally, act locally, about what are the problems that you and your community are experiencing and care about? What are the tools that you do have? And how can you act together to address those? Because once you have a small success locally at something like that, then you can turn to some of the bigger issues that may be a little bit more conceptual, maybe a step removed, but that you really need, as Carol said, that community building to start getting traction.
Thank you. And thank you all both for joining us today. Our guests today, who have really made us much smarter, have been Carol Ziegler, a professor of nursing at Vanderbilt University, and Katrina Korfmacher, a professor of environmental medicine and director of community engagement at the University of Rochester. Again, thank you all so much for joining us today. And thank you, audience, for listening in today to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio. Hopefully you have been made smarter. The conversation starts here, but our goal is for it to continue in your home, in your social circles, your workplaces, at the water cooler, and in the grocery checkout line, so that we can all work together to realize that healthy living is simply not possible without a healthy planet. Our culture is a result of a trillion tiny acts taken by billions of people every day like yourselves. And each of those tiny acts can seem insignificant, but all of them add up one way or the other to the change that we each live through. This is your host, Bernice Butler. Thank you, and listen again next week for more on environmental justice, climate justice, and health impacts. And listen to any of our past shows on podcast wherever you get yours. Thank you.